Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Black Mage Sachs. Ethan, that is my guess for your starting class in Final Fantasy One. What do you think you are? You got like Black Mage, White Mage, Red Mage is like some offense, some defense. You got fighters. You got a black belt. You got a monk.
This is a man who knows. I love a good what color is your essence question. Perhaps a story for Lull will be why that reminds me of drama school. But if we're talking about the associated mechanics or themes. Yes. Of these things, in yes, the tokens that care about draining, pinging people for non-creature spells. You know, I love to get my opponent to six before I die.
Oh, you're just already black maging with the cards that we've seen previewed. I'm at like
that's what I'm saying.
Have you ever played an RPG game like choosing a class like that?
No, not really.
Wow, not a real gamer, ladies and gentlemen. He's the marshal of the podcast.
You know that about me, though. Like, it shouldn't continue to surprise you. I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, even like more tame RPGs like Zelda, like the open world stuff, it just stresses me out a little too much. I'm like, I need a straight line, A to B. I need to know that I'm accomplishing all the tasks along the way. The sort of do whatever you want nature of these kinds of games, too much for me.
Says the man who in MTG Draft tries to assemble 4 to 5 piece convoluted combos to gain incremental advantages.
Yes, that's so perhaps so you understand that's where I want to do it. I don't need to do it elsewhere. How about you? What if you were to ask this question to yourself, what would you be?
Oh, Black Mage, for sure.
Oh, okay. But that's less to do with the mechanics and more to do with the essence.
Yeah, more the essence, I think. That was my favorite character when I played Final Fantasy One back in the day.
That's right. I've already forgotten that you're the FF head representation here on the podcast.
Because I'm not much of an FF head, but it's a lot of pressure, but I will take on the role.
It's far and away. But we've got some folks in the Discord helping us out, and I want to shout out to you. You're wearing this bright yellow shirt for hashtag summer break, baby.
It's my holiday world tea. Yeah, it's summer break. It's the first day. I'm feeling good. I'm psyched that there is a new set coming out, like, right now. This is a good time. Good time for it to be coming out. We'll have early access next week, thanks to Wizards for those free preview accounts. And I'm ready to get jamming and solve this format. And I'm super hyped to be in Vegas doing a live show again. We should shout that out.
Yeah, we should, for sure. We are going to be doing the live show in Vegas. You are sunny in t-shirt and disposition here as we embark on your month of freedom from school. And yeah, we've got a new set to dive into. We are going to be at MagicCon Vegas in a few weeks. So if you're there, please come check us out. We're trying to figure out how to do maybe some drafts on Friday before our live show Friday night. You and I will be PTQing on Saturday. So we'll be around. We'll have some tokens. We want to say hi. We want to meet folks, and we hope to see you at the live show. Let's take care of a couple other housekeeping things and dive into new set season. We've got lots of cards to check out for Final Fantasy, which I'm really excited about. It's awesome to see some new mechanics and see if we can't start to paint a picture before the full set comes into play and before getting early access sort of warps my impressions and I go, ah, Sibsig Appraiser, that's not where it's at. Snowmelt Stag, now that's where it's at for sure. let's chat about the Patreon page and then dive into the meat of the episode. patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show. New set season is an awesome time to get in on the Patreon because you get access to the Discord, which is where you get to interact with a bunch of like-minded limited individuals. And new set season is a great time to do that because we're talking about previews, pouring over the new cards. Once the full spoiler drops, people are sharing their tier list. We're doing practice drafts in the Discord, and then when the format drops for real, we get to break it wide open with everybody in the Discord, which is awesome. And then if you move up the reward tier rankings on Patreon, you can also get access to our Patreon podcast feed, which gets you this episode a day early ad free and also gets you access to our weekly bonus mini episode of Lords Unlimited, which drops into your feed on Thursdays. So if any or all of that is of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, check it out. You can do sort of a week-long trial for free if you want to see how that podcast feed fits into your podcasting app lifestyle. And you can also do sort of like I was reminded because some folks did this week, you can get a discount if you want to just sort of be like, I'm going to support these guys for a year. You get a sort of 10% off your patronage there. So that's all available to you on Patreon. And we want to welcome our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Kradzij, Mary, Ryan, and Jack. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And welcome on in to any new listeners. Maybe this is your first step coming from Final Fantasy. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Okay, let's dive into new slash returning mechanics, because I think some of these are new. Some of these are new with a twist. And then we'll get into talking about some individual cards, trying to start to form the picture of what this limited landscape is going to be like. First up is Job Select, which is sort of a play on Living Weapon if you're an entrenched player. But this is an equipment that comes into play and creates a 1/1 colorless hero creature token, and then you attach that equipment to the newly created token.
So, for example, we've got Dragoon's Lance, 1 and a white for an artifact equipment at uncommon. It's got Job Select, so it makes a 1/1 colorless hero when it ETBs. And then this equipment gets auto-attached. Equipped creature gets +1/+0 and is a knight in addition to its other types. During your turn, equipped creature has flying, and then it has equip 4. So you get a 2/1 flyer on your turn, 2/1 on the ground on their turn, plus a pretty nice equipment.
It's kind of like the... I guess it's not quite like Living Weapon. It's more like the equipment from Phyrexia Obi-Wan that made the Rebels, the 2/2.
Well, or wasn't there like an M set with Ancestral Blade or whatever that made a 1/1 and then it was auto-attached?
Though Ancestral, the reason I'm making the comp to Phyrexia Obi-Wan is because the equip costs were steep. Ancestral Blade sort of just died into Short Sword or whatever. This, you get like the sort of thing you get up front, which is for Dragoon's Lance, you're getting a 2-mana, 2/1 flying on your turn.
That's
a good rate. And then the rate on the equipment isn't that good. 4-mana equip +1/+0 flying on your turn. But it's not nothing. And a lot of the stuff in this format with the tokens running around, the equipment and the job select, we've got a little bit of a rectangles the format on our hands here, I think.
Well, sure. And also red white looks like it's going to be an equipment archetype. And there are cards that offer cheaper ways to equip these equipment, I think, so that the re-equip costs aren't so steep for the actual red-white archetype. Like, you'll probably play Dragoon's Lance in any white deck just because it's a good uncommon, but it's going to be at its best if you've got cheaper ways to re-equip it.
For sure.
Next up, we've got Tiered as a new mechanic. So some spells in this set offer 3 different effects, increasing in their power with how much mana you pay for them. So this is basically Tiered Kicker.
Yeah. Think of it like Kicker, Multi-Kicker, whatever, Modal versions of spells. For example, we have Ice Magic, which is 1 and a blue for an instant, and it has 3 tiers. The first one is Blizzard, which is 0, return target creature to its owner's hand. Blizzara is 2 additional mana to have target creature's owner put it on their choice at the top or bottom of their library. And then Blizzaga is 5 and a blue additional mana for to have target creature's owner shuffle it into their library. So either 2-mana bounce, 4-mana top or bottom, and then a whopping 8-mana to have them shuffle it back into their library.
Yeah, I doubt that mode will be used often. We really should have asked Ben Weitz about the internal testing name for top or bottom.
Well,
We'll hit him up.
One of the most exciting new mechanics, I think, is Saga creatures. So this is, you know, a twist on things. We've seen sagas before. We've seen sagas that transform into creatures before, a la Neon Dynasty. This is the first time we have seen sagas as creatures. So Saga creatures follow all the same rules that other sagas do, right? They enter with a lore counter on them. Additional lore counters are placed at the beginning of your first main phase. Until the last chapter is reached, that ability resolves, and you sacrifice the saga. We had a chance to chat about these on Lords Unlimited, and you had sort of posited that these are probably going to slow the game down because you're not really interested in, you know, attacking into these creatures or trading with them because you're like, it'll be gone in a turn, right? I'll take the hit from it, or I won't attack into my opponent's version of it. So, but I usually we would just shout out one of these. I kind of wanted to talk about a bunch of them now because they're so interesting to think about how they're going to play out.
I agree. These look very powerful. I think these are going to be some of the best cards in the set based on what we've seen previewed right now.
Yeah. So, for example, the first one is a green one. We've got a cycle of uncommons here. The green one is Summon Fenrir. It's 2 and a green for a 3/2 saga. Chapter 1, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, then shuffle. Chapter 2, when you next cast a creature spell this turn, that creature enters with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. Chapter 3, draw a card if you control the creature with the greatest power or tied for the greatest power. I mean,
yeah, so like, let's look at an average case scenario, like or best case. Let's say you curve out on turn 3 with this, right? So you cast this on turn 3. You're even on cards at the beginning, right? You've got a 3-2 to attack or block with. Maybe you think about that as, I don't know, gaining you 3 or 4 life or something because your opponent's not going to want to attack into you. You've got the land on the battlefield tapped, so you've ramped. Next turn, you play potentially a 5 drop that comes into play with an additional +1/+1 counter, which is absurd. But maybe you even don't hit the lottery. Maybe you play another 3 or 4 drop that's just bigger, which is great. Mm-hmm. Likely then at that point that you're going to have the creature with the greatest power or tied for the greatest power. And this is going to replace itself. So you're going to have 2-for-1 plus gain a bunch of life. This card is nuts. And I think these cards, I was saying they were going to slow the game down. That's if you're behind. Like, I don't think your opponent's really going to want to trade with them. But also, if you're ahead, you can press the advantage with these cards too. Like, this one, especially on turn 3, is going to be backbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, and the floor of this is what? 3 mana, 3-2, search for a basic land, ramp, and chump block with this.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst case scenario of this card. Or, like, it gets in for 3 and then it dies and you don't draw a card. Like, I don't know. This is very good. But it's important to note that this, like, when they have 3 chapters, this can only attack for 1 turn, right? Because it comes in, it's going to have summoning sickness. On chapter 2, it can attack. And then chapter 3, it's going to be sacrificed before your combat phase.
Assuming you're doing what the card asks of you, you're getting ramp plus replace itself, plus either an attack or block. Like, these, I just want to say, like, a lot of times we run through cards on these preview shows pretty quickly, and we're like, oh, that's good, that's great, that's no. Like, these look like some of the best cards in the set right now.
I agree. What's going on with the blue one?
We've got Summon Shiva, 3 blue-blue for an uncommon 4/5 enchantment creature saga. And chapters 1 and 2, you tap target creature an opponent controls, put a stun counter on it. Chapter 3, you draw a card for each tapped creature your opponents control.
So likely this is like 5 mana, 4/5, and this will basically stop your opponent from attacking for a turn. Because they're not going to want, well, I guess unless they're killing you. Hard to imagine they're killing you when you have a 4/5 in play. But you tap a thing, keep it tapped. Tap another thing, keep it tapped. Then the first thing untaps, and then you'll draw a card when this leaves. So this really does slow the game down quite a bit, I think. And quite also,
unless your opponent has an army of flyers, like, you're pretty safe and cushy when this comes down.
Well, the other thing, it really lets it's so incredible if you're the offensive at all.
Yes,
because tap a thing, keep it tapped. It has a stun counter. On their turn, you remove a stun counter, but it's still tapped. Then on your turn, you tap a different thing down. You're swinging in with whatever else you have plus this 4/5. It's massive.
Yeah, this is more of an offensive card than it is a defensive card. That's where you want to play this. You want to play this in a blue tempo deck, and it's going to be absolutely absurd there.
This next one, I almost wanted to put in great or garbage, but I figured let's just talk about all the summons together. This one is the white one, Summon Primal Garuda. It's 3 and a white for a 3/3 flyer. Chapter 1 is this creature deals 4 damage to target tapped creature and opponent controls. And chapter 2 and chapter 3 are another target creature you control gets +1/+0 and gains flying until end of turn. Wait, these are all, I mean, I guess the green one isn't, the blue and the white one, they are very aggressive.
Well, it's like, weird because your opponent has to have a tapped creature. This one's a little at odds with itself. This is like a counterpunch card. Like, you're trying to catch your opponent in making a greedy attack slightly, and then you get to like pounce on them. I think this one is the least intrinsically powerful of the ones we've seen so far.
And it's also not necessarily that good on turn 4. Turn 4, you kill a 3-drop, and then you're launching your 3-drop or 2-drop into the air. I guess it's still pretty good.
This is fine. This is the least, like, I don't expect this one to be one of the best cards in the set.
Yes, I agree.
But I would still go great if we had to go great or garbage.
Yeah.
The next one, this card is, holy cow, just ridiculous if you can land it. So, Summon Anima. This is 4 black-black for a 4/4 uncommon creature with menace. Chapters 1, 2, and 3, you draw a card and you lose a life. Chapter 4, each opponent sacrifices a creature of their choice and loses 3 life. Huh. That just occurred to me. I hadn't really put that together yet. That you, if you trade them off, you're not going to get the bonus chapter at the end, right? Like, you don't always get... That had never occurred to me. I don't know why that
It didn't occur to you that if the creature died, it wouldn't be on the battlefield anymore?
Yeah. Well, like, I'm just so used to evaluating sagas as you get all the things, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I can't be the only one. Listeners, back me up here. I can't be the only one who's made it this far.
You're the Final Fantasy representative. You're not necessarily the reading the cards to the end representative.
I did read all the way to the end. I was reading to the end. I just didn't know that you might not get to the end.
That's true. Yeah. This one, I think, is still less powerful than the green and the blue one, in my mind.
Certainly with the knowledge that you don't necessarily get all 4 chapters.
I would have really liked it if it recouped the life. Like, each opponent sacks a creature and you gain 3 life in chapter 4 would have been nice.
It's way better, yeah.
Yeah. And the last one here is the red one, which is summon Esperama, 2 red for a 3/3. Just, that's it. Vanilla. Chapter 1, this creature deals damage equal to the number of non-creature and non-land cards in your graveyard to target creature and opponent controls. And then it give wizards you control +1/+0 until end of turn on chapters 2 and 3. Again, not crazy powerful. The green and the blue one seem head and shoulders above. This one, again,
this one's number 3, though, I think, right?
Yeah, but you're not playing this on curve. I guess it's a curve topper. This feels a little bit more build aroundy to me.
Yes,
than
but
green,
good
the green and the blue ones
around.
Are just powerful.
Great. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Saga creatures, we got our eyes on you.
So I actually think the black one's the worst. Like, if we were ranking them, I think I'd go green 1, blue 2, kind of red and white tied for 3rd and 4th, maybe. I think maybe red slightly ahead of white. I think the ceiling on red is higher than the ceiling on white. And then black?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the black and the white ones are in last. I could see the white one being worse than the black one, but splitting hairs.
All right, next we've got transforming double-faced cards. So these are cards that when you cast it, you cast the front face. And then when its transforming condition is met, you flip it over to the backside of the card. So, for example, we've got side quest Hunt the Mark. Ethan won't be doing any side quests. He's focused on the main quest line. He doesn't do that open world dabbling around stuff.
I'm just a little offended that, like, the designers think I need them to, like, name a card side quest. Like, I'll figure it out. I'll make my own side quests, okay?
Doing side quests before they were cool. This card is quite good. You should be taking this side quest. So, side quest Hunt the Mark, 3BB for an uncommon enchantment. When this enchantment enters, destroy up to 1 target creature. And then at the beginning of your end step, if a creature died under an opponent's control this turn, you create a treasure token. Then if you control 3 or more treasures, you transform this enchantment into a 5/6 dragon without flying. It's on the ground. And it has 1 and a black. Sacrifice another creature or artifact. Yasmat gains indestructible until end of turn. Tap it.
Yeah, that card looks awesome. 5-mana removal spell that has the potential to ramp you, that also has the potential to turn into a 5/6 creature.
Well, and there's other ways to make treasure other than this. Like, treasure is floating around in the format. So it's possible that you could have 2 treasure laying around already when you stick this and then flip it immediately.
And then there's lots of returning mechanics. There's flashback, there's landfall, there's vehicles. There's also adventures, but these seem to just be on rare lands. Did you see these anywhere else yet?
Mm-mm.
So there's a cycle of rare lands. This one's the blue one. It's Jador Aristocratic Capital. It's an ETB tapped blue land, but then it also has an adventure. This one is Overture for 4BB. It's a sorcery. Target opponent mills half their library rounded down. And this land is a town, and that is a subtype of lands that's going to matter in this format that we'll talk about a little later on. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of the things I've encountered since seeing a therapist and talking about it with people close to me is that some of them get a little squirmy. There's definitely a feeling some of them have that's like, oh, therapy, that's a great option for other people, but not for me.
Mental health awareness is growing, but there's still progress to be made. People still avoid seeking mental health support due to fear of judgment. When people hesitate to get help, it doesn't only affect them, it impacts families, workplaces, and entire communities.
This Mental Health Awareness Month, let's encourage everyone to take care of their well-being and break the stigma. The world is better when people are happy and healthy.
BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching people with the right therapist from their diverse network of more than 30,000 licensed therapists with a wide range of specialties.
BetterHelp is fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient, serving over 5 million people worldwide.
We're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/lords to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now back to the show.
All right, that takes us on to taking a look at the color pair themes and the signpost uncommons for those color pairs. So first up, we've got blue-white artifacts, which cares about artifacts and artificers specifically. So we've got Cid, Timeless Artificer. What's going on there?
This is, well, did you see that there's 15 different copies of this art, which I assume has to do with perhaps this character is in, Ben, yes, the FF head, the resident FF head. I need you to know why there's 15 arts of Cid, Timeless Artificer in the set. But that's very cool. But also what's going on with this card is that it's 2 white-blue for a 4/4 uncommon legendary creature. It says artifact creatures and heroes you control get +1/+1 for each artificer you control and each artificer card in your graveyard. And a deck can have any number of cards named Cid Timeless Artificer. And for funsies, it's got cycling for 1 and a blue. And I assume that's so that if you've got a legendary Cid in play and you've got a legendary Cid in your hand, you have something to do with it.
Yeah, which is nice. And I think, and worth noting that all the job select cards make colorless heroes. So you could potentially have some huge heroes if you have a lot of artificers running around.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, and also nice that then, like, you cycling your extra Cids, then they're in the graveyard, and so it's still counting those as well.
Correct. This seems pretty good. This could easily have been 2 white-blue for a 3/3, and the fact that it's a 4/4 is pretty nice. Cycling, pretty nice. I like this card.
I agree. The other signpost that's been previewed is Titus Blitzball Star, 1 white-blue for a 2/1. Whenever an artifact you control enters, you put a +1/+1 counter on Titus. And whenever Titus attacks, tap target creature and opponent controls. Hello.
It's a very aggressive card.
I don't think, like, I feel like we've often had to, since the foundation of the podcast, where Territorial Hammer Skull, which was 2 and a white for a 2/3, when it attacked, you tapped a thing. I feel like we haven't seen that exact text on a 3-drop since. Like, sometimes when a thing enters, you get it, or perhaps you have to pay mana when it attacks to tap the thing. This is just straight up.
Straight up, except this is legendary, so you can only ever have one on the battlefield at a time. You can't go nuts like you could with Territorial Hammer Skull, but this is good. I mean, it's going to be pretty easy to make it a 3/2, I think, at which case you're very happy with the card, and then can snowball from there. This is very good if you've got an aggressive blue-white deck.
Yeah. Next up is blue-black, which seems to care about filling the graveyard. First up, we've got an enabler and another one that is an enabler and a banger of a payoff. The enabler here is Lock Coal, 1 blue-black for a 2/3 legendary. It's got Death Touch and Lifelink, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card, then discard a card.
Card is excellent?
It's excellent. It's much worse that this doesn't do it on ETB. Like, Tomebound Lich was like 1 blue-black for a 1/3 Death Touch and had it when it entered. I think, you know, when we saw that with Deathwing Scavenger in, what was it, Bloomburrow, like, that having it on enter, the fact that you get the loot immediately does matter, does make it better. But yeah, this card's good.
Next, we've got Ultimisia, Time Sorceress. This is 3 blue-black for a legendary 4/5 human warlock at uncommon. And whenever it enters or attacks, you surveil 2. So this one does do it on ETB. And at the beginning of your end step, you can pay 4 blue-blue, black-black and exile 8 cards from your graveyard. If you do, transform Ultimisia into Ultimisia Omnipotent. And it's a 7/7 menace with time compression, which says when this creature transforms into Ultimisia, take an extra turn after this one. So it's basically 8 mana, probably win the game, which is a very achievable condition for a card like this, I think.
For an uncommon? Yeah. This is powerful. Seems really good to me.
Well, and blue-black's got a lot of surveil. Like, that's kind of blue-black's theme, is like churning through your library, dumping some stuff in the graveyard. So I think the hardest part of this card to fulfill is going to be the 8 mana portion. But, I mean, there are a lot. Like, we're going to see blue-green is ramping again. Like, maybe there's going to be some Sultai, ramp, soup, Ultimisia sweetness going on.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, that takes us on to Red Black, which cares about casting non-creature spells. First up, we've got Garland, Knight of Cornelia, which is black-red for a 3-2 uncommon. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, surveil 1. And then it has the ability 3, black-black, red-red, return this card from your graveyard to the battlefield transformed, activate only as a sorcery. And it comes back as Chaos the Endless, which is a 5-5 flyer that when it dies, you put it on the bottom of its owner's library.
This card's awesome. So it's just a two mana 3-2 with some surveil on it, and then eventually 7 mana, like dies into with as flashback 7 mana 5-5 flyer.
Yeah, it's excellent. That's, I mean, it's very good.
Really good. Yeah. The other signpost I'm less jazzed about, this is Black Waltz number 3, 2 black red for a 2-2 flying death touch. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Black Waltz number 3 deals 2 damage to each opponent.
It's a little small ball for the amount of mana that you're paying.
Yeah, 4 mana thing that's only 2 toughness that doesn't have an ETB. Not that crazy about it.
Next up, we're on red-green, which maybe is caring about lands, landfall, but we only have one of the signposts so far, which is Gladiolus Amicitia. 4 red-green for a 6-6 uncommon. When it enters, search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. And it's got landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, another target creature you control gets +2/+2 and gains trample until end of turn.
It's big. How this will match up to the other big things, like, it's not going to be hard to find 6 drops for your decks.
Is a special one, though, right? I mean, it can search up towns, which is right, that, pretty good.
I was going to say, so towns, again, that's that subtype of lands that we'll get to that exists. And there does seem to be certainly blue-green, I think, cares about towns. There may be some teamer towns happening in the format. But yeah, and this does do it when it comes in, right? 6 mana, 6-6. Give something else +2/+2 and trample until end of turn. And then if you untap with this and hit your land drop, this is cracking it as an 8-8 trample. That's pretty huge.
Yeah, and I think no matter what, even your opponent's going to have to deal with this. You're already going to have gotten an advantage. You're going to have gotten a land. You're going to have maybe pushed some damage, hopefully. Yeah, I like this card.
Okay. Next, we've got green-white, which I can't quite tell. Go wide, go tall, just good. Go good. Like, these signposts are awesome, especially the first one, Garnet, Princess of Alexandria. It's green-white for a 2-2 legendary with lifelink. Whenever Garnet attacks, you may remove a lore counter from each of any number of sagas you control. Put a +1/+1 counter on Garnet for each lore counter removed this way. This has to mean we're going to get a cycle of common saga creatures, right? It can't just be the 5 uncommon signposts, or that cycle of 5 that we saw.
That would be cool. I'd be into that. I really like the saga creature design.
Yeah. I do too. I would guess we're going to see them at common. We're recording this on Saturday the 24th, and there have yet to be any common sagas revealed. So, you know, don't add us if we missed any, because they haven't been revealed yet. But that would be my guess here. But this card just looks awesome. Like, the fact that not only, like, that's just a good thing and a good thing, right? You get to remove a counter from a saga you control, which means it's going to get to stay on the battlefield an additional turn. And then this is going to enable itself to have more attacks, because it's going to grow as it does that.
Yeah, card is excellent. Like, curving that into the uncommon green saga is just going to be GG.
Well, because what you're going to get, if you do that, you search up a land, you remove a lore counter, so now it's on 0. So then the next turn, you're going to get chapter 1 again and search up another land.
Yeah.
And still have your 3-2 hanging out.
Yeah. Oof. And have a 3-3 lifelink. Like, it's,
yeah. Yeah,
it's going to be dumb.
Yeah.
Next up is Renoa Heartily, which is 3 green-white for a 4-4 uncommon, and whenever it enters, you create Angelo, a legendary 1-1 green and white dog creature token, the best boy, and it has the ability whenever Renoa Heartily attacks, another target creature you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature you control. So right, presumably, so it's like, Angelo.
Yeah, right. You want to get Angelo getting chonky. But like, that makes it seem like you're trying to go wide a little bit, because then you get a lot of +1/+1 for Angelo. And then Garnet sort of seems like you're going tall, / Garnet makes it things like you're doing sagas. So these two signposts don't necessarily point to one thing for me for green-white, but it does point to me that green-white looks good.
Yes. Next up, we've got blue-red, which cares about casting non-creature spells spent with 4 or more mana. So question for you about this. There's a lot of cards that have flashback 4 in the set, but that have a lower like converted mana value than four, those still are not going to have, they're not going to trigger those cards, right?
Yes, they are. That's why it's worded so clunkily, because it's not what the mana value of the card is. So I guess I said that in the wrong way in the show notes. It's about the amount of mana spent on the spell.
Okay, so those cards with flashback four will then trigger these cards.
Correct, okay. Yeah.
So we've got Shantotto, Tactician, Magician, which is one blue-red for an 0-4 uncommon that says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, gets plus X plus O until end of turn, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast that spell. If X is four or more, draw a card.
There was a card like this in Strixhaven. It was like a rare 0-8 that got the plus X plus O whenever you cast a spell. Now, 8 toughness is a lot more than 4, obviously. That card was really good.
I think this card is insanely good.
It is, right?
This card's very good. Yeah. The play pattern, it's going to be able to block the turn that it comes down. You're fine, I think, to throw it in front of a 3-3 or whatever. They have a combat trick, good beats. But then you're going to be able to attack, presumably as a 4-4 draw card, hopefully, in a perfect world. I mean, there's a lot of two mana cantrips that flashback for four that should be able to let you do this reliably. But even if you can't, it's a 3-mana, maybe it's attacking as a 3-mana 3-4, but this is a very aggressive threat that gets better surrounding it by spells, which is exactly what a blue red spells deck wants.
Also kind of tough to attack into this on the ground into open mana, because any amount of that open mana could convert into Shantotto's power.
Well, and it's not just instants and sorceries. Like, it's not creatures, too. Can you imagine this with the Shiva Saga on five? Wait, like, you're attacking with as a 5-4, tapping a thing down. You're getting a card draw.
Let's pause for the
creature, though.
The sagas are creatures. But
dang.
The equipment will trigger this. And there's equipment running rampant in the format. It's not just a red-white thing. It's in every color. The other blue red signpost, it's okay. We're all learning together. The other blue red signpost is the Emperor of Palamicia, blue red for a 2/2. It taps for blue or red, spent only for non-creature spells. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana was spent to cast it, you put a counter on this creature. And then if it has 3 or more +1/+1 counters on it, you transform it into the Lord Master of Hell. What a name, which is a 3/3. And it has, whenever the Lord Master of Hell attacks, it deals X damage to each opponent, where X is the number of non-creature, non-land cards in your graveyard.
I really feel like from a flavor perspective, the Lord Master of Hell should have slightly better stats.
It probably should also be black. I'm just saying. I don't know if a black blue, red maybe, makes sense. But there we go. Next is red-white, which is equipment, I assume, but that's not based on the signpost that's been previewed so far. That's just sort of based on what the rest of the set looks like. But I do like this signpost. It's Zidane, Tantalus Thief. 3 red-white for a 3/3 legendary. When it enters, you gain control of target creature and opponent controls until end of turn. Untap it. It gains lifelink and haste until end of turn. And then whenever an opponent gains control of a permanent from you, you create a treasure token.
How good is this? I was trying to evaluate this when I was reading it.
Seems like good, not great. I would put it at C+, probably, if I have to slap a grade on it. Like, I don't think it pulls me into red-white, but seems good. Like, it's Zealous Conscripts, except it doesn't have haste itself. And so less good. The lifelink is doing a lot there. The treasure token, presumably, does a lot. Like,
well, and if you get mana value, if you get your mana higher, there are a lot of sacrifice outlets running around in the set. Like, there's potentially some serious wombo combos to do with this. I've got my eye on Zidane.
Yeah, I do too.
Next up, we've got blue-green, which is ramping and caring about towns. So first card we've got is Ignis Scientia, which is one green-blue for an uncommon 2/2. When it enters, you look at the top 6 cards of your library. You can put a land card from among them onto the battlefield tapped. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And then it's got the ability, one green blue tap to exile target card from a graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, you create a food token.
This card's awesome. I mean, I don't care.
Assume looking at 6 cards, you're not allowed to whiff. You're never allowed to whiff.
I would hope so. But yeah, 3-mana 2/2 rampant growth with like some random graveyard hosing tacked onto this is not nothing. Creating food tokens is not nothing. Like, I really like this card. I'm curious your thoughts on the other signpost, which is Omega Heartless Evolution. It's 5 green blue for an 8/8 legendary artifact creature robot. And when it enters, for each opponent, you tap up to one target non-land permanent that opponent controls, put X stun counters on each of those permanents, and you gain X life, where X is the number of non-basic lands you control. And the non-basic lands in the format are towns.
This card is incredible, right? Yeah. This card is bonkers good.
It's bonkers good. I mean, 7 mana, 8/8... stun a thing.
If you've done the towns thing at all, if you've done the town things at all, you're getting to do this. Oh, it's only one, but still, like,
you don't win the game.
It's very good. You're killing a threat for 2 to 3 turns, potentially more in the late game, which is basically killing it. So it's 8/8 Flame Tongue Kavu, gain 3 to 4 life, assuming you've done your job well with towns, and then so good.
Yeah, it's good. I like Ignis more than I like Omega, personally, if I have to rank the two.
Sure. Yeah. But they're both... Blue-green's looking good. Shout out to Blue-green.
Shout out to Blue-green is my early take as well. Black-white, no signposts previewed yet, but it does look sacrificey, aristocrat-y to me. That looks like, based on what the black and white cards are doing, I would assume that's what black-white is trying to do.
Yes. And that takes us on to black-green, where we've got a pretty cool... meld card here. So there's two cards that have the potential to combine into another card. So the first one of those is Fang Fearless Lassie, 2 and a black for an uncommon 2/3. And whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, you draw a card and you lose a life. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Ooh, that combos with my boy Ignis Scientia. Just remove my cards from the graveyard, get a food, trigger this. And then there's a green uncommon, which is Vanilla Cheerful Lassie. 3 and a green for a 3/2. When it enters, mill 2 cards, then return a permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. Love that. And then at the beginning of your first main phase, if you both own and control Vanilla and a creature named Fang, Fearless Lassie, you may pay 3 black green. And if you do, you exile them both, then meld them into Ragnarok Divine Deliverance.
Which is 7/6 for a legendary creature, Beast Avatar. It's got Vigilance, Menace, Trample, Reach, and Haste. And whenever it dies, destroy target permanent and return target non-legendary permanent card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
This is awesome. I love this existing in the set. These two cards are two great tastes that taste great together. This is a cool dream to chase. I'm excited about this.
Well, and these curve perfectly into each other, right? Fang's a 3-drop. Vanilla's the 4-drop. Vanilla's going to trigger Fang. And then the next turn, assuming they both live, you pay the 5 mana at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase. Like, this is going to be the wombo combo-iest curve. Yeah, it's going to be 3, 4, 5 if you have this in your starting hand and you don't miss your land drops. Happy upcoming Father's Day, Ethan.
Thank you.
You know, dads teach us a lot. How to fix things for ourselves.
I'm not that handy.
How to pick ourselves up and power on.
Or stop trying.
Even how to make do with less so the family has more.
One less draft so my family can eat tonight.
This Father's Day, let's show our dads that they deserve the world at a price even they will be impressed by. Treat dad to a pair of everyday earbuds by Raycon, because he deserves to relax, recharge, and enjoy his favorite music, podcasts, and calls in crystal clear sound.
Raycon's latest model is better than ever, with a 32-hour battery life and quick charge function where just 10 minutes of charging yields 90 minutes of battery.
These earbuds also come with active noise cancellation and start at just half the price of other premium audio brands.
We talked about all the content we consume on Lords Unlimited a couple weeks ago, and it's no secret I fall asleep listening to podcasts every single night. And my wife and I are both really happy with my Raycon Everyday Earbuds. It ensures that she doesn't have to hear people talking about magic cards as she falls asleep, and I get a comfortable earbud that stays charged all night long.
And if for whatever reason your dad's not liking his Raycons, they offer a 30-day happiness guarantee return policy, no questions asked. Go to buyraycon.com/LOL to get 15% off site-wide.
That's right. Right now, Raycon is offering up to 15% off site-wide when you go to buyraycon.com/LOL. That's buyraycon.com/LOL. That's going to take us on to looking at some different categories of cards. First up, we've got removal. Just a good thing to check in on what's going on with Limited. And it looks like removal is plentiful. First up, we've got Fate of the Sunchrist, which is 4 and a white for a common instant. Destroy target non-land permanent, but it costs 2 less to cast if it targets a tapped creature. Big question for you. I feel like my takeaway after Aether Drift was like, gotta stop underrating the split removal in white that's 5 mana/2 mana, like Ride Down. But this, it doesn't exile like Ride Down, and it's 3 mana/5 mana, not 2 mana/5 mana. This is like fine. A lot it's good. Worse, right? It's good?
You're going to play it. It's good. It's like a C+. It's not pulling you into white. It's not broken.
Right. It's not Ride Down. It's not B levels of Ride Down good. It doesn't mean white gets to be controlling levels of good.
I agree. That's my takeaway.
Okay. That's what I wanted to check in on.
Next up, we've got Slash of Light, which is 1 and a white for an instant. It deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control plus the number of equipment you control to target creature.
This card is excellent.
I expect this to be better than the one we just looked at.
And every job select equipment potentially adds 2 things to the board for Slash of Light. That's awesome. I also really like this next one.
To be clear, it's only going to be great in... like, you have to do some work to make it great. Like, it's kind of like build around E good, but assuming you're meeting those requirements, I think it is going to be better.
Correct. I like this next one, which is White Orisite. It's 2 white-white for an artifact. When it enters, you exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until this artifact leaves the battlefield. But it's also a white mana rock. It taps to add white mana.
Yeah, this is a very cool twist on an O-ring effect. I think, is this the best of the three? How would you rank them right now?
My guess is Slash of Light is going to be better than White Orisite if white is, like... I assume white's primary game plan will be doing the equipment, job select, going wide, rectangle thing. And I think Slash of Light will be the best removal to support that.
Yeah, it's really hard to say without seeing the full picture of the set. I mean, Slash of Light certainly has the most setup cost. It's tough between Fate of the Sunchrist and the O-Ring. I think Fate's probably better than the O-Ring too. That's not gut reaction. Like, just when I see the cards, I like White Orisite more, but by the time you hit forward, you really need another white mana, and then you've got the blowout potential of them getting their thing back.
Equipment running around. There's no shortage of places to put mana in modern Magic, you know?
Sure. Yeah. But there is, like, serious blowout potential, this being 4 rather than 3. Like, you're never having an efficient turn.
He's back, baby. After your love of Stormplane Detainment, you're back to the white the blowout potential. People are going to be running Artifact Destruction. I don't know. You're back, baby. I'll see you in 3 weeks when you're telling me how good White Orisite is.
I have a court date. Next up, we've got Sephiroth's Intervention. This is 3 and a black for an instant, common, destroy target creature, you gain 2 life, bing, bang. Excellent. Could easily be 2BB, and it is not.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's also Vayne's Treachery, which is a functional reprint. It's 1 and a black for an instant. With Kicker, sack an artifact or a creature. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. If this spell was kicked, that creature gets -6/-6 until end of turn instead. This is also a really good removal spell. Plus, it potentially has synergy, depending on the kinds of sacrifice matters things we'll see floating around. I like this card.
Next up, we've got Suplex, 1 and a red for a common sorcery. Deals 3 damage to target creature. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead. And players of Modern rejoice. It also has the ability exile target artifact.
What am I rejoicing about exiling in Modern?
The One Ring, baby.
Isn't that gone?
Is it?
Yeah.
From Modern?
Isn't
it banned?
Didn't it?
No way.
Yes.
Yeah, well, players of Legacy and Vintage rejoice. Maybe the One Ring will get unbanned now. Who knows?
Great. Yeah, that's all they needed was a sorcery speed way to exile it. That was what was holding it back. Sorcery speed a braid, but you exile it. I think that's still going to be pretty darn good. Next up is Clash of the Icons, single green sorcery. Choose 1 or more. Target creature you control fights target creature and opponent controls. Remove a lore counter from target saga you control, or put a lore counter on target saga you control. And you could do all of these. I don't know. I guess putting a lore counter, it would probably kill the creature, or in some cases when it has more than three chapters, it would just accelerate.
But it'll go
it.
In order, right? So you can just re-trigger a thing, right? Can't you remove it and then put it back
oh,
on?
Oh, you're so right. I didn't even think about that. Oh, okay. So you don't need like multiple sagas. You just remove it, put a lore counter on it. But removing it doesn't cause chapter abilities to trigger. So you could either
but when
rebuy
you, but when you put
its
it
current.
Back on, yeah. It will. Yeah, yeah. You can rebuy the current chapter or advance it ahead or just ticket one back to have it stick around longer. But there's a lot of flexibility on what you can do here with your sagas.
If you want the creature to be around another turn, you can just remove rather than add a lore counter.
Yeah, but a lot of modality here, and this, to your point, also makes it seem like there's got to be some common saga creatures.
Well, and also, like, a fight spell with sagas is not that you would do it with the one you're messing with the lore counters, but, you know, if you're like, I've got this creature that's hanging around, it's going to be dead next turn anyway, but it's a 3-2, I can use it to fight a 3-3, and I already got my ETB from it, and that doesn't feel so bad. I think Clash is good, too.
Yeah. And lastly, we've got Overkill, which is 2 and a black for an uncommon instant. Target creature gets -0, -9,999 until end of turn. Pretty sick.
That's pretty sick. Well done. Well named. Well done. Okay, I got some top commons to watch for you. Some I feel more passionately about than others. First up is Dwarven Castle Guard. 1 and a white, 2/1. When it dies, make a 1/1 colorless hero creature token. Rectangles.
I'm pushing back against this one. I don't see it here. I don't see a top common watch here.
I think I mostly agree with you, but I really like this card.
Next up, Weapons Vendor. 3 and a white for a 2/2. When it enters, draw a card. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control an equipment, you can pay 1. When you do, attach target equipment you control to target creature you control.
Okay, so cantripping white creature. This is worse white than creature. Pack Beast, right? Worse than Pack Beast.
Way worse than Pack Beast.
Do you think this is worse than the white removal that we saw? Probably.
No, I think it's better than that.
Better than the 3 removal spells, really?
I think so. It plays to the board, and getting your re-equip cost for 1 is big. Like, and it's going to have the Mardu devotee effect that, like, your opponents aren't going to want to spend a removal spell on a 2-2 that's sitting on the battlefield that's already cantripped. And when they do have to, because you're getting re-equip cost for cheap, it's gonna be very good for you. Like, I wonder if
we're in removal is bad territory. I'm already starting to think with like saga creatures and the job select and all the like tokens running around, things like this. Like, I don't want to use removal on anything.
I agree. I mean, it seems a little early to make that sweeping of a take, but I think
that's what we're here for, baby. Yeah, that's what we're doing here.
Sure. I do think Weapons Vendor gets top common watch for sure.
Okay. I think this next one does as well. This is Dragoon's Wyvern. It's 2 and a blue for a 2/1 flyer. When it enters, make a 1/1 colorless hero creature token. I mean, body in a body, flyer in a token. This card's great.
Yeah, excellent.
And then this last one. What do you think about this last one?
I was so sad to see this here because I loved this card and I wanted to put it in greater garbage and be like, this card's amazing. I was so sad to see that you also like this card. So we're either both going to be really right together or really wrong together. But this is Retrieve the Esper. 3 and a blue for a sorcery. Create a 3/3 blue robot warrior artifact creature token. Then if this spell was cast from a graveyard, put 2+1/+1 counters on that token. It's got flashback for 5 and a blue. Like, this is such a gluey card. It's at the intersection of everything that all the decks are caring about. So it's 4 mana value for the blue red decks. It's artifacts for the blue white decks. It's, if you think about it, just as a 4 mana 3/3 that then draws you a 6 mana 5/5. Like, this card read crazy powerfully to me, but I thought it was going to be sneaky powerful, but maybe not if we're both clocking it.
Well, to your credit, I was clocking it because I had your voice in my head when I read it. Was it's just a 4-mana 3/3 that draws you a 6-mana 5/5. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. And then once I also put together that it double triggers the MV or the spend mana 4 or more on non-creature spells stuff twice, I was like, yeah, this card seems excellent to me. So I'm excited about Treat the Esper. It also, I mean, you stopped at just blue, red, and blue, right? Blue, white. It's awesome to have flashback cards in blue black that cares about filling the graveyard. And it's, what better thing to ramp to than your blue greens in your blue green deck than a 4-mana 3/3 and a 6-mana 5/5.
Yeah, it looks very good to me.
I agree. Takes us on to looking at some equipment and equipment matters stuff. Just more job select / just straight up equipment. First up is Lionheart. It's a 4-mana artifact equipment. When it enters, it deals 2 damage to any target. Equipped creature gets +2/+1 and has an equip cost of 2. Really is going to live or die by how good 4-mana deal 2 is.
Yeah.
And maybe to the point of maybe removal, like in a classic sense, won't be that good. But removal attached to things, 2-for-1, you're 2-for-1. Or rectangle, your rectangle is going to be perhaps a world that we live in here.
That takes us on to Crystal Fragments, which is white for an uncommon equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1. It's got an equip cost of 1. So short sword also has a very cool activated ability. 5 white, exile it, then return it transformed. Activate that only as a sorcery. Comes back as Summon Alexander, which is a 4/3 flying enchantment creature saga. Chapters 1 and 2. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to creatures you control this turn. Chapter 3, tap all creatures your opponents control, which I assume will probably win you the game.
Yes. Yeah, that's so interesting, because I would think of Short Sword as a very aggressive card, but this ability is honestly quite controlling. It's like, all right, let's just, as long as we get to a board stall, I'm going to win with my Summon Alexander.
Yeah. Because you could also because the first two abilities are offensive, right? The damage won't be prevented on defense when you're blocking.
No, oh yeah, so you can be, it could just end the game there, but it'll definitely end the, if it doesn't end the game in 1 and 2, it's going to end the game in chapter 3.
On 3, yeah. But I was thinking when you said very defensive that you also could just like chump with your creatures and they wouldn't die or something.
No. I just meant defensive in that, like, it gives you a point in which, like, as long as I get to this point with a board, I win the game.
Yes.
Yeah. Next up is Paladin's Arms, which is 2 and a white for a common equipment with job select. Equipped creature gets +2/+1 and has ward 1, and it's a knight in addition to its other types, and it has an equip cost of 4. So 3-mana, 3/2, dies in 2, an equip cost of 4, +2/+1.
I like this card. I think this also looks better than the white removal to me.
If that's true, then we are definitely in removal doesn't matter territory.
Or maybe for white, because white wants to do this play to the board, do the equipment thing. But 3/2 ward 1 is annoying.
I agree. I just like all of these cards. I'm like, the fact that this dies into a thing that goes on another thing is annoying, you know?
Well, and red-white specifically is going to be able to re-equip it for cheap. Like, imagine having because if you're drafting highly and you're drafting Paladin's Arms highly and you're drafting Weapons Benders highly, which is the cantripping 2/2 that re-equips for 1, like, then you're re-equipping after your 3/2 dies, you're re-equipping on your Weapons Bender, which has already replaced itself and now is a 4/3 ward 1 for 1 mana.
I feel like this happens a lot where they preview more white cards than other colors, and so I'm left being like, white looks awesome after every preview episode, but it does. And there's another one here. White Mage's Staff is 1 and a white for an equipment with job select. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has, whenever this creature attacks, you gain a life. And this is a cleric in addition to its other types. And it has a re-equip cost of 3. Again, like 2-mana 2/2, little English on it, dies into an equip cost of 3 equipment. Like, all of these are so good and they're common. And like, they give you creatures that are good on curve, 2-mana 2/2, 3-mana 3/2, that you don't want to kill because they're actually just 1/1s, and then they die into relevant pieces of cardboard.
Yeah, the white equipment stuff with job select looks very strong to me.
I agree.
Next up, we've got Sage's Newlis. This one is less good. This is 1 and a blue for a common with job select. Equipped creature gets +1/+0 and has whenever this creature attacks, untap target attacking creature. As a cleric, in addition to its other types, it's got a re-equip cost of 3.
Yeah, so 2-mana 2/1 dies into this. I'm less excited about that. I really like equipment that doesn't boost toughness at all. I like a lot less, unless it's like crazy aggressive. This is a little bit of a nothing burger. Speaking of, here we go. This is my titular mage. The Black Mage's Rod is up next, which is 1 and a black. For an equipment with job select, and it gives equipped creature +1/+0, but it has the very special text of, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent. This makes it a wizard in addition to its other types and has a re-equip cost of 3. I'm probably still less jazzed about this, though. The fact that subsequent equipment triggers this as well, like it's not just instants and sorceries, like just black-white job select is going to power this out.
Yeah, this looks quite good to me. Next up, we've got Samurai's Katana, 2 and a red for an uncommon equipment with job select. Equipped creature gets +2/+2, has trample and haste, and is a samurai in addition to its other types. It's got a re-equip cost of 5.
But it's just like, but yeah, so yeah, it's got a re-equip cost of 5, which is expensive. But what you're getting up front is just good. You're getting a 3-mana 3/3 trample haste.
Yeah, that's very good.
That's really, really good. Yeah, the equipment's awesome.
The thing about all this stuff that we're seeing, like if you look at the red white equipment deck as it is right now, with what we're saying, you know, the equipment with job select checks out, like on the vanilla test, it looks good. And then the fact that there's the common 2/2 cantriper that can re-equip for 1, all of that to me looks like almost Masters set-y levels of power, you know, for like a red, like it's a very synergistic, hyper-focused plan there that you can have. Yep. I'm very curious about the overall power level of the set. It does look to be more synergistic than raw power coming off of Dragons of Tarkir. And I'm looking forward to that. But it also reminds me of Lord of the Rings a bit. I think it's impossible to not compare the two sets that way. I mean, all the uncommons are legendaries. But it does look to be... Yeah, it does look to be more synergistic. I think powerfully synergistic than Lord of the Rings at first blush.
Yeah, well, I mean, white for sure looks extremely powerful to me right now. I wanted to peep some of the equipment matters payoffs. The first one is Adelbert Steiner. It's 1 and a white for a 2/1 with lifelink, and it gets +1/+1 for each equipment you control. I mean, it's going to be buffed by the equipment being on the battlefield. Then it's going to be buffed when you equip those equipment to it. And it's got lifelink. This card's also great, I think.
Next up, we've got Barrett Wallace. 3 and a red for a 4/4 with reach. Whenever it attacks, it deals damage equal to the number of equipped creatures you control to defending player. That one is significantly less good.
That is going to be the number 47 Barrett has reach on the 50 takes. This next one I really like. Freya Crescent is single red for a 1/1. During your turn, it has flying, and you can tap to add red to spend this mana only to cast an equipment spell or activate an equip ability. 1-mana 1/1 flyer in a format with tons of equipment that you want to play that is a mana dork for those equipment being cast and equipped. I think this card is really, really good. Maybe it's just red, white, gold. Maybe it's only really good in red, white, but equipment looks prevalent enough to me that I think this might just be capital G good.
Yeah, this card looks excellent to me. That takes us on to 4 mana value non-creature spells mattering. So first up, we've got Shahagin, which is 1 and a blue for a 1/3 at common. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana was spent to cast it, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature, and it can't be blocked this turn.
Will this be like a build-around-y common? It feels like cards like this often underperform. They don't quite get there. But I could see the support being there for it.
This is going to be, if you play it, it's going to be a late pickup, though. This does not look right. Like, well, I'm going to draft my Shahagins highly and end up with 5 of them, and that's going to be my plan. You just might play it in a blue-red deck.
I agree. There's also the Prima Vista, which is 4 and a blue for a 5/3 flying vehicle with crew 2. But whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana was spent to cast it, this becomes an artifact creature until end of turn. So notably, this will trigger as a 5 mana non-creature. Will trigger the other things, and so it's both an enabler and a payoff for this mechanic.
Is this good? My initial reaction to this card was not favorable.
I think it will only go in that deck, but I think it's good in that deck. Like, it's a 5-mana 5/3 flyer in that deck that is going to trigger those other things that I would think has to be good.
Yeah. But it's so fragile, and it's not helping you stabilize the turn it comes down. Like, this is at best a C in that deck, right? Like, it's not, you're never like picking this and it's causing you to draft that deck.
No, I don't think so. But I think once you are doing it, I think it's really good. I don't know. Like, you got to put some stuff that costs. You got to put non-creature spells that cost four or more in those decks. I don't know.
Well, but there's a lot of cheap ones that have flashback for four.
Sure.
Which is nice. Sure. So you get some there. Your whole deck doesn't have to be clunky. We've also got Ultros, Obnoxious Octopus, which is one and a blue for an uncommon 2/1. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell of four mana, of at least four mana, expect to cast it. Tap target creature and opponent controls and put a stun counter on it. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell of 8 mana was spent to cast it, you get 8+1+1 counters on Ultros.
Blazaga is going to trigger this, right? That's your 8 mana common.
Okay, okay.
That's how you get there, is with the tiered stuff.
I see you, Ultros. Cool.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty sick. I want to chat about mana fixing because it leads us into the towns and towns mattering. So there's a cycle of common slash maybe they're like commons, but they're in their own slot. I don't quite know how they're working with play boosters, but they're ETB tapped duels. So they're basically gates. Like if you played in any of the Ravnica blocks, because those didn't gain you life or have anything else. But the sort of special thing that you get is that they have a subtype of town, and there's gonna be some stuff that cares about towns, as we'll see in just a little bit. But I wanted to just check in on lands in a larger sense first, which is importantly to note that we've got land cyclers.
Yeah,
now they're 2 mana land cyclers. They've sort of learned it's not quite Lord of the Rings territory where they're 1 mana cyclers. But I'm curious to see how these play out. Talk to me about some of these cards that we've seen so far.
So the first one is Balam T-Rexar, which is 4GG for 6/6 trample. When it enters, you gain 3, and it's got 4 cycling, 2. Just Colossal Dreadmaw in shambles at this point. Absolute shambles.
Yeah, Colossal Dreadmaw plus gain 3 plus forest cycling as a buyout. Like, I'm pretty excited about this card. This is sort of why I was, like, looking at, whatever, the red-green signpost, which is better than this, obviously. But I was like, if I don't get the red-green signpost, I can get Balam T-Rexar, and that's pretty dang good for a 6-drop.
Yeah, and it's worth noting there is a reanimation spell to potentially go with the land cycler. So we've got Evil Reawakened. It's 4 and a black for an uncommon sorcery. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with 2+1/+1 counters on it.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if there's more black-green signpost stuff that's previewed or revealed beyond the meld cards, if that's what black-green is doing. Because it's probably doing,
but regardless, like, Evil Reawakened stuff in tandem with the 2 and a black 2/3 that cares about things leaving your graveyard and then drawing you a card, that's like a great combo there as well.
For sure. Let's check in on the other towns that we've seen. So they're not maybe the best. There's Adventurer's Inn, which is a town that when it enters, you gain 2 life and it taps for colorless.
Yeah, that's going to be bottom of the barrel.
Uh-huh.
We've also got Capital City at uncommon, taps for a colorless, and then as a filter land, so you can pay 1, tap it to add 1 mana of any color. It's also got cycling 2. That one's looking pretty good.
This one looks really good. Yeah, I like that one a lot. We've also got another bad one. The Gold Saucer is a town that taps for colorless. You can pay 2, tap, flip a coin, and if you win the flip, you create a treasure token. And then you can pay 3, tap to sacrifice 2 artifacts to draw a card. I mean, maybe that middle ability is nothing, and maybe the third ability comes up in some food or treasury or blue-white artifact-y decks.
That's what I think. Yeah, I think the third ability is relevant. I could see playing the Gold Saucer.
But so then those towns in tandem with some town payoffs that we have.
Yeah, first up is Poo Poo UFO. 2 mana for an 0/4 flyer. You can tap to put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. And you can pay 3 mana until end of turn to have this creature's base power become equal to the number of towns you control. This card looks legit, despite having a ridiculous name.
I agree. I like this card a lot. You can do some really like cool, sneaky stuff where like your opponent may not want, like you got 2 mana up, they attack into you, you block, tap, dump an additional land into play, then activate this, blow them out in combat. I don't know. Pretty sneaky card, and definitely playing with what blue green is wanting to do, which is ramp. Like you put the additional land into play from your hand, that's ramping. We've also got, man, I do love me a 2 and a blue 1/4 at common. This is Kikirn Merchant. You can pay 1, tap, draw a card, then discard a card, Or you can pay 7 tap, sack this creature, draw 3 cards, but this ability costs 1 less to activate for each town you control. I'm excited about this card.
Yeah, the card looks good. It looks like everything you want to do. It's relevant early, it's relevant late. I mean, it's not going to be a high pick or anything, but you're definitely probably playing it. Definitely probably.
In blue-green. Yeah, those are the flaming hot takes you come to the show for. Definitely probably.
And lastly here, we've got Town Greeter, 1 and a green for a 1-1 common. When it enters mill 4, you can put a land card from among them into your hand. And if you put a town in your hand this way, you gain 2 life.
This 4 is more than 3.
4 is a lot more than 3. This card's going to be very good.
Well, and it's gluey. The mill 4 is going to be really nice in black-green as well.
Yes. Town Greeter looks... I think Town Greeter should have been on the top common watch segment.
Wow. That seems aggressive to me. I guess Einok Wayfarer was just pushed, and missing land drops is bad. And oh, and just a 1-1 body is, then you slap equipment on it. Okay, I'm seeing it. I see the full picture. I'm in for Town Greeter. Speaking of flaming hot takes, it's time for Greater Garbage, Ben.
You love to see it.
So
tell everyone the rules of the game.
If you've never joined us before, the rules of the game are quite simple. We're going to talk about some cards, and we have to come out on the side of either great or garbage. And those words are pretty self-explanatory. So first up, we have the Crystals Chosen. This is 5 white for a sorcery. Create 4 1-1 colorless hero creature tokens. Then put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
I really like this card in theory, but it's a 7 mana white card seems so at odds with what white is wanting to do. I think ultimately I have to, if I have to choose Greater Garbage despite liking this card as a magic card, I think I have to come down on the side of garbage.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, but this, it's interesting that this is another card at non-rare that makes me go, I'd like to build white as a control. If I have this, I'd like to build white as a late game deck as best I can, because I get this massive army in a can plus effect. So I have my eyes on it. I think for the sake of content, I will come out on the side of great.
And wow, some banned towns, Crystals Chosen.
I mean, say less, please.
Next up, we've got Aether, which is 3 and a blue for an uncommon artifact. You can tap, exile this artifact to add blue, and whenever you next cast an instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You can choose new targets for the copy.
This is a four mana for a non-creature spell. So we'll trigger that stuff when you cast it. And then helps you spend mana to cast other things. And like, but it does make up for the tempo loss that you get when you cast this up front.
It's one shot. It's very flavorful. Very flavorful.
It's very flavorful. But I think as long as you can, if this is a true blank when you cast it, I think I'm out on it. But in blue-red, this theoretically will not be a blank when you cast it up front. It'll do something when you cast it up front. And then it really does something when you're copying it, when you're using it to copy an instant or sorcery. I kind of want to say great in blue-red.
I kind of also want to say great in blue-red, like especially if there's more tiered spells, like if there's some banger rare tiered spells or something that this is going to help ramp you towards. I think I'm in on Aether.
Okay. Next up is Kistis Trepe. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 legendary. When it enters, you may cast target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that spell. If that spell would be put into a graveyard, exile it instead.
I wanted to put this here also. I was going to put this here, and then I saw that you already had it here because you worked on the show notes before me. This is hard to evaluate. It can get any graveyard, so you can get your opponent's stuff too, which is cool. But how relevant in the late game is a 3-mana 2/2 going to be? So it's almost like demonic tutor for a thing in your graveyard. Like, my initial reaction, like I said, was favorable, much like to the white one. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, I don't know. This actually doesn't seem that good to me.
So in March of the Machine, we had Halo Forager, which was this exact effect, except it was 1 blue black for a 3/1 flyer instead of 2 and a blue for a 2/2 vanilla. But it had the same like grab an instant or sorcery with Mana Vault, like, and cast it out of either graveyard. But the fact that you could just run that out as a 3-mana 3/1 flyer on 3 and be happy with that as a threat, you're never happy with that attached to this. So the buyout doesn't really exist. In the late game, I think the effect is good enough. Like, kill a thing plus 2/2 or draw some cards plus 2/2, I think will be good. It's the fact that playing this on 3 is atrocious makes me want to say garbage.
If we have to choose greater garbage...
And you know we do.
Choosing garbage. If fine were an option, I'd say fine. you're gonna play this maybe in your blue green towns deck as a late game mana sink or whatever. But yeah, ultimately, I don't think this is actually that good.
That's my fear as well.
Next up, we've got Realms Sketching. There was just a run of blue uncommons, like right in a row on Scryfall, that were all very hard to evaluate. So yeah. Realms Sketching, 2 blue-blue for an uncommon sorcery. Create a token that's a copy of target artifact, creature, or land.
I'm usually not a fan of clone effects, but the...
4-mana value.
4-mana value. Oh, yeah, I didn't even actually think about that. But I was thinking about how good the rare Naga was from Tarkir Dragonstorm that was a clone effect for anything. Now, that's a format where there's dragons sitting around, so there's often things to scale up on the battlefield for your 4-mana. But, like, it did make me think that this might just be good, and I really wasn't thinking about the 4-mana value non-creature stuff this triggering.
Plus, this can also do what you were talking about, like rectangle your rectangle. Like, this can copy a job select thing.
Yeah.
You get the trigger and you get the hero. I think Realm Sketching is great if I'm going to come down on greater garbage.
I'm sold on Realm Sketching is great as well. Syncopate's back. X and a blue instant counter target spell unless its controller pays X. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into its owner's graveyard. Where
I'm
you
out.
At?
I'm out. I'm done with Syncopate. I think.
You're done?
I'm done with Syncopate. I think that after playing in Tarkir Dragonstorm with that blue uncommon and it just feeling horrible every time I had it, even with sometimes mana value 4 creatures where you were getting a bump of 1 or 2, I'm out on Syncopate. Like, it's fine. I will play it, but it is not pulling me into blue.
You can overpay to trigger your spend 4 or more mana on stuff.
I'm out.
I kind of wanted to be out too, but I thought you were going to be Mr. Syncopate. And so I was going to be like, nah, it's got to be terrible. But that's sort of how I feel too. Maybe we're knocking Spectral Denial too much because of how good Dispelling Exhale was, that we were not expecting that to be the dichotomy of like Dispelling Exhale is better than the uncommon. But I do feel like Syncopate is not quite good enough.
Right. Well, you have to pass with such an excessive amount of mana up.
Correct.
For it to be reliable. Like, if you pass with 1 or 2 up, you're just like, fingers crossed that I get a land my Syncopate. And like, even doing it for X equals 2, which is not always effective in limited, you're holding up 3 mana. Like, you're just, it's so hard to get advantage from it.
It's so disastrous when you're on the draw and you pass with Syncopate on 2 and your opponent goes land number 3, play a 2-drop.
I know. Yes.
It's just the worst play pattern imaginable.
I'm out on Syncopate. Okay. I'm saying garbage if we have to choose, but ultimately fine. Like, I'll probably play some Syncopates, but it used to be a good card in my head, and I think I am downgrading it to fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Next up, Valkyrie Aerial Unit. 5 blue-blue for a 5/4 uncommon with affinity for artifacts. It's got flying. So affinity for artifacts, if you don't know, it costs 1 less cast for each artifact you control. 5/4 flyer when it enters, surveil 2. Yes, please. Sign me up. This card is a build around and it is great.
Valkyrie Aerial Absolute Unit. More like this card rules. Yeah, this is great. I'm into this card for sure. Okay, next up, Circle of Power. 3 and a black sorcery. You draw 2 cards and you lose 2 life. You create a 0/1 black wizard creature token with, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this token deals 1 damage to each opponent. Then it also has the text, wizards you control get +1/+0 and gain lifelink until end of turn. What a weird card. So you get the wizard, which is cool. Your wizards... if you have anything to cast after this, your wizards will have lifelink, and so their pinging ability will, but this won't inherently do that, because this spell is giving them lifelink. I just feel like there's a lot of like things that you think might happen together with this card, where you're like, oh, I got a wizard, so then I'm also pinging, or like, I got a wizard, and now that has +1/+0 and lifelink, and it does, but it doesn't have haste or anything. So it just feels like there's a lot of text on this card that ultimately reads, draw 2, lose 2, make a 0/1 wizard.
Yeah, but that's, I think, something, especially if aristocrats is a thing, that's going to be something that black white's interested in. I think if I have to say great or garbage, optimistically, I'm going to say great about this card.
Okay. I'm in for great. I think I ultimately want to say fine. It's a very hard card for me to like see how it's going to play out, but maybe it'll be great. I think I'm going to say garbage. I don't know. This looks so... 4 mana, draw 2, lose 2, make a 0/1? Is that good?
If you're sacrificing the 0/1 for value, yes. If you've got some other black mage rotted wizards running around and...
But like, compare this to any job select equipment. Maybe that's not a fair comparison, but that is like effect plus rectangle. Aren't all the job select equipments, or most of them, better than this?
But I think, I don't know. You're looking at the card's floor. I also think it has a very high ceiling. Like, for somebody who is self-proclaimed excited to jazzed or jazzed to draft black-red, like, Black Mage's Rod is a common. That is presumably going to be one of the better commons for the black-red deck. And that's making wizards. Yes?
That's a wizard.
Yeah. After you do it. So, like, the turn, like if you curve, like imagine curving Black Mage's Rod into Black Mage's Rod into this or something. Yes. Like that's not an insanely hard thing to posit, because Black Mage's Rod's a common. Then you're attacking with 2/3/1 life links. You're up life, you're up cards, you put tons of pressure on your opponent. They've traded with your job select cards, and then you've still got the equipment laying around to re-equip. Like I think this card has a really wide range, but yeah. I think it's, if you build around it, like if you look at it as a build around, I think its ceiling is very high. And I don't think its floor is that bad.
I agree. I'm sold. I'm going Tony the Tiger great on Black Mage's Circle, or Circle of Power, rather.
Next up, we've got Gaius Van Balesar. 2 black-black for an uncommon 3/2. When it enters, choose one. Each player sacrifices a token of their choice. Each player sacrifices a non-token creature of their choice, or each player sacrifices an enchantment of their choice.
There's like no way to know how good this is going to be, right? We probably just have to say garbage.
What?
This is great. Is this
a bit?
This isn't a bit. What am I missing about this?
this card is great.
This card is just great.
This card is Flame Tongue Kabu. This card is. Whatever the 2BB 2/2 killer thing is, Ravenous Chupacabra.
You do see that it says each player, right?
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't see that.
No, what? You read it. You read it 3 times.
Sorry, my brain decided how the card worked. My brain decided upon seeing this. This was a cool Ravenous Chupacabra variant.
No.
I'd have been really sad the first time I cast it. Okay, thanks for saving me. Appreciate
just
you.
Relax. Let's relax the pendulum swing here, because I don't think that just because this isn't Flame Tongue Kabu means it's terrible. It's just hard. It's really hard to evaluate, because you get to choose. So like, if you don't have tokens and they have tokens, cool. If they have a big creature, like you could, if they have just one creature, this could just be a 4-mana kill spell. Sack itself. If they have an enchantment, you don't have an enchantment, that's great. But I don't know if there's an enchantment removal spell or something.
I agree. It's a much more interesting card evaluating it correctly.
You thought I put Modal Flame Tongue Kabu in greater garbage as a bit?
I was very confused as to what was... I was just more confused as to its presence in the greater garbage section.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was the easiest snap grade of my life when I read it as target player.
Yep. Kind of want to. I think this will probably be garbage, but I could see it being great too. I have no idea. It's really hard to evaluate.
I think great. I still think great. Even
I think so too.
You're going to be able to find one of the three modes that is beneficial to you often enough that I think it ends up being a card you're interested in.
That's where I'm at as well. It's actually a really clean answer if your opponent's doing the job select stuff and you're not. Just like, cool, sack one of your job select tokens. And yeah, that's not quite a 2-for-1, but it's something. Next up, we've got Poison the Waters. This is 1 and a black for an uncommon sorcery. Choose one. All creatures get -1/-1 until end of turn. Or target player reveals their hand. You choose an artifact or creature card from it. That player discards that card. Is this buyout enough to make you excited about a conditional Thoughtseize?
No, I'm out on this card. I think garbage.
Yeah, garbage / sideboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next up is Self-Destruct. 1 in red for an uncommon instant. Target creature control deals X damage to any other target and X damage to itself, where X is its power.
What a weird card.
It's going to be great when you combo it with like the 1,000 spiky needles cactus thing that gets power like 10,000 or whatever.
That's a really cool achievement. Achievement unlocked right there. Okay, that's awesome. I think this is probably great. This is like better. It's like Fling. It's better than Fling.
Why is it better than Fling?
Because if the thing is a 4/5, it doesn't die.
Oh. Yeah.
If its toughness is greater than its power, it doesn't die.
Oh, I hadn't put that together yet. I just shortcut Fling in my head. Yeah, great.
I think it's great. And it's just, and the fact that it goes face is pretty sick too. I mean, like Fling does, but just going to end some games, respond to a removal spell, etc.
Next up, we've got Side Quest, Play Blitzball. 2 in a red for an enchantment. The beginning of combat on your turn, target creature you control gets +2/+0 until end of turn. At the end of combat on your turn, if a player was dealt 6 or more combat damage this turn, transform this enchantment and then attach it to a creature you control. Flips into World Champion Celestial Weapon, which gives the equipped creature +2/+0 and double strike and an equip cost of 3.
I wanted to be, after my great, I saw War Effort for what it was in Greater Garbage last time. I wanted to put a similar red enchantment here this time, but I don't see it with this card. I'm not excited about this.
This card is garbage, I think. Not a side quest I will be taking up.
I think you could sell me if this flipped, if its flip and auto equip condition somehow allowed it to happen pre-combat.
Pre-combat, yeah.
The fact that it post-combat flips auto attaches to something and your opponent has the end of your turn or their turn to answer that creature, and then you're left with, do I pay the 3 to re-equip? Like, that makes me kind of out on this side quest.
I agree.
Next up is Zaj's Chocobo. Single green for an 0/1 bird at uncommon and has landfall. Put a +1/+1 counter on this creature.
I'm kind of out. This looks like garbage to me.
I think largely I agree with garbage, though. It's just basically like, if this isn't in your opener with an untapped green source,
it's horrible.
It's horrible. The one caveat being blue-green probably can still do some stuff with this, with ramping. And so like, even if on turn 3 or 4, you double spell with this and the signpost uncommon that then ramps you, then this is already a 2/3 flyer. Like,
it's not a flyer. It's a 2/3. They're dodo birds.
The chocobos don't. That is going to trip me up so many times. It's a bird. It's a bird in the art, but it doesn't fly. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't even fly. Never mind. This is garbage.
Next up, we've got Haste Magic. 1 in red for an instant. Target creature gets +3/+1 and gains haste until end of turn. Exile the top card of your library. You may play it until your next end step.
This is probably
bottle,
great,
bottle
right?
The top card of your library. I feel so cool when I say bottle.
Bottle the top card. This is great. This is a 2-for-1.
Yeah, I think this truly looks great. Except, is there not going to be room with all the job select and all the equipment and all the?
Yeah, you have too many 2-for-1s to play this 2-for-1.
Too many 2. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, is everything a 2-for-1? So nothing's a 2-for-1.
I think you probably still have room for this. This is just going to feel so miserable. Like, your opponent attacks into you. Like, they're offering their trade their 2/2 with your 2/2, except they have 1 and a red up.
I don't think this is that big of a beating, though. Like, I am, I am closer, I think, to garbage than great. Like, I don't think this is Majestic Metamorphosis or whatever the card was, like the two and a blue turning thing into a 4/4 draw card.
No, I guess that's the fairest comparison, that kind of effect. I still think this is great.
I think I'm gonna go garbage, or like not a high pick, but great when you land it properly.
Oof. Okay, I think this
do you
is
think
be
do
great.
You think it's not a high pick though, right?
I don't know. I could see this. I always like. So okay, we didn't put on the list here, but there's Run Amok in the format, or better than Run Amok.
Plus three, plus three, and trample
in green. I just like always underrate those kinds of effects. Like, that card's gonna be great.
Yes.
I think similarly, this card is gonna be great. I just because I never have room for combat tricks in my decks, but like I almost want to run this over spot removal because it is a 2-for-1.
I'd buy that.
Yeah, I think that makes it great. How high of a pick it is, I don't know. Like, Snakeskin Veil is great. It's not a high pick. So I guess it's a similar thing.
Next up, I love this card. Sleep Magic, blue, uncommon.
Okay, but wait, real quick. Do you think you've read this card correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
When this aura enters, tap enchanted creature. When enchanted creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step, when enchanted creature's dealt damage, sacrifice this aura.
Okay. I don't know.
Super flavorful, right? Like, you put the creature to sleep, like in an RPG game, and then if you damage it, it wakes up and joins combat again. I think this is really cool, but it's also pretty easy to not damage a thing once it's tapped.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I could tell, the only ways to do it or the things you might be not excited to do this against are green decks, because then they have fight spells. Like, if you're sleep magicking a big thing.
Ooh, yeah.
And then they go, cool, fight. Now the sleep magic falls off. That's going to feel pretty bad. So I don't know how much fight is there going to be in the format? How prevalent is that?
But that feels like saying you don't want to play. It's like the O-ring argument, right? Like, you don't want to play O-ring because they might be able to blow it up. Like, I think this is powerful enough when it is great that you're running it. I think this card looks excellent to me.
This is better than River Strike Mastery. For example, like as a comp of like single blue or a removal spell, like this is much better than that. Like, yeah, there you might get got by it in some senses, but mostly quite good.
Yes.
Next up, we have Tonberry, single black 2/1, enters tapped with a stun counter on it. And during your turn, it has first strike and death touch.
This card does so much damage. And could you imagine it wearing equipment?
It does so much damage.
It's impossible to block.
It's impossible to block, yeah. Yeah, and wearing equipment is pretty good.
Like, it starts attacking. If you're on the play, it starts attacking on turn 3. 2 damage every turn, wears equipment super well. I think this card's going to be really annoying to play against. I think it's going to be a groan test when it comes down on turn 1 for the format.
I'm with you there. I'll go great. Last card on the list, Ride the Shoe Puff. 1 and a green enchantment with landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. And it has 5GG, this enchantment becomes a 7/7 beast creature in addition to its other types.
It's a hard one to evaluate. I could see it being okay, but also taking turn 2 off to essentially do nothing feels kind of bad.
It does, but you would never, like, you would only ever do that if you didn't have a 2-drop in your hand.
Sure.
Like, I think ideally you're playing this you're double spelling with this. Like, play it on turn 4, hit your land drop, play a 2-drop type deal.
But, sure, but then my question is, does blue-green need this? Like, I assume it will just have better places to put the mana. Like, if I have to choose, I think I'm saying garbage.
Yeah, right. And so you said what I was going to say, which is that I think this is a blue-green gold card only. But I would think in blue-green, it's going to be great. It's going to have, like, I feel like just this sitting around is going to have a Dragon Brood's Relic effect on the game where, like, when my opponent has that in play and I'm not going to kill them before that thing gets cracked, I'm like, well, dang, maybe I have to find a way to deal with this. Cause like, if you're not killing your opponent before they get to 7 mana, and in blue green, I think that could even come before turn 7. This is dumping counters on stuff and is a 7/7. That is a lot. I think in blue green, this is going to be great.
Okay. Keep an eye on it.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. The Shoe Puff, we'll have to check in on. All right. Any
thoughts? This format looks sweet. Like, I think when we initially looked at Lord of the Rings, it was like, oh, this looks like a core set in Lord of the Rings clothing. This looks deeper than a core set to me. And I also loved Lord of the Rings because ring tempting was an amazing mechanic. I think the enchantment sagas look like the saga creatures look like a really cool mechanic that I will enjoy playing with and enjoy the play patterns of. It looks to be a high synergy format after a fairly low synergy format in Tarkir Dragonstorm. I think I'm also looking forward to that. I am very optimistic about this format after all of the cards I've seen previewed so far.
I agree. I don't know if I've ever not been optimistic because I'm just I'm a giddy little kid every time new Magic cards are coming out. But I agree with you. These cards look fun and I'm excited to get my hands on them.
All right. And on that note, great place to wrap us up. We'll see you next week for the Crash Course. So tune back in. And thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. If you're interested in checking out our Patreon page, if you want to see our tier lists from past sets, if you want links to our Twitch channels, our YouTube channel, our episode backlog, all of that's available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. Thank you.